And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Donald Trump, we've been hearing, getting crushed by Hillary Clinton's money machine. We'll talk about that tomorrow, Wednesday, of course, Politics Day. I'll be joined by one of our analysts, Dennis Goldford, and others. We'll describe the state of the Trump campaign, his decision to fire his embattled campaign manager. This with less than a month before the Republican convention. And also we'll talk about the chances that Congress will come up with legislation to keep firearms out of the hands of suspected terrorists. Politics Day tomorrow during this time here on River to River. This half hour, we want to focus on mental health services here in Iowa. Hospital leaders say that a bottleneck for psychiatric care in the state is worsening, in part because there aren't community-based agencies equipped to handle those patients' transition. So in this half hour, we want to discuss this problem in depth, find out what is this bottleneck and what it means for patients going through mental health crises. Perhaps you can join us with your questions about mental health services here in Iowa. Perhaps you or a loved one have experienced mental health services here in Iowa and have something relevant to pitch in or a question. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us this half hour, Tony Lays is a health reporter for the Des Moines Register in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. By phone, joining us, Dr. Jimmy Potash is a professor and chair of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Potash, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be with you.
Tony Lay, start us off here. You've written a lengthy article on this topic for the Des Moines Register, our jumping-off point for this discussion. You've written about how many Iowans with serious mental illness are stranded, so to speak, in a hospital for even months after doctors say, okay, you're good to go. Give us an example that you discovered in your article.
Well, I got onto this story because I heard about a man who was stuck at Broadlands Medical Center, which is Polk County's public hospital. He was there for over a year after doctors had cleared him, had said that he was medically stable and could move on. He had a complicated case of schizophrenia. He had a history of being aggressive at times. He was brought there, and after about 6 to 8 weeks, they felt like they had him stabilized. And it took them 14 months to find a community placement, and that cost the county taxpayers nearly $500,000. The hospitals have to eat that cost because Medicaid, which insures most of these folks, it stops paying after they no longer have a medical need to be in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And Broadlands estimates that they spent almost $5 million on cases like that just last year. So that's how I got started on this story.
Talk a little bit about what it means not to find a place for someone once the person is cleared to leave the hospital. What type of resources are they looking for that they can't find?
Well, the issue goes back to the country's getting away from having institutional care for people with mental illness. And for most people, that's a good thing. We've been trimming or closing big institutions and closing residential care facilities, the old county homes here in Iowa. We've closed several dozen of them in the last 10 years. And most people who used to go to those facilities are being shifted into apartments or shared private houses with some supervision from residential care agencies. And for most people, that has worked out pretty well. But there's this small number of people who have more severe mental illness who can't really cope. And so then when they go to the hospital in a crisis, they get stabilized, the hospital tries to find them in a placement, and all the agencies say, we're not set up at the moment to take that person. And so they wind up just in the psych ward for weeks or months at a time.
Right, and the delay getting them out means that bed is occupied. So that's where our logjam is. That's where our bottleneck is. So there are people who really need or in a critical state need to come into a place like Broadlands Medical Center who are turned away?
Absolutely. I mean, every day there are people who from the Des Moines area are getting sent by ambulance or in a sheriff's car, sometimes hundreds of miles, to find the next open bed. And meanwhile, there's people sitting in the psych wards here in Des Moines who the doctors say don't really need to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jimmy Potash, comment on this, given reports that you've heard, Tony's reporting. How would you characterize the state of mental health care here in Iowa?
Well, I'd say, first of all, Tony's absolutely right on target, and he wrote a terrific article, and I encourage people to look at it if they haven't seen it in the Register. There are a lot of problems that we have right now with our mental health system, and one of the problems we have is the shortage of psychiatric beds.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really highlighted in a report that just came out last week from the Treatment Advocacy Center, which sadly reported that Iowa is last in the country in number of state psychiatric beds per capita. We're actually 51st in the country because Washington, D.C. gets included in the count. So whereas at one point we had something like 6,800 state psychiatric beds in Iowa, we now have 64.
How?
So 99% of them have closed.
How did this happen? When did that start, and what were the forces at work?
Well, so it happened in part for very good reasons, and that is that some really terrific psychiatric treatments became available in the 1950s and 60s. And so we can do a much, much better job taking care of patients with serious mental illness than we could 60, 70 years ago. And so one reason beds closed is that a lot of people were able to be adequately and appropriately treated. And so they didn't need to be in the hospital. That's wonderful. The problem is that although our treatments are much better than they used to be, and although we sometimes can take good care of people in the community, there remains a subset of people with serious and persistent mental illness for whom our treatments do not work in the way that we would like. And they're people who are too ill to succeed in the community. And so there does remain a real need for long-term care for this subset of very ill patients.
Mm-hmm. And that subset of patients that you described there, just we need to grow resources to meet their needs outside of the hospital setting?
Yeah, we certainly do. On the one hand, we can do better with the psychiatric beds that we have in some of the ways that Tony was talking about. And in addition, we could do better with resources outside of the hospital. I'll tell you that just today here at the University of Iowa Hospital, there are 12 people who need admission, and we have zero beds available in our hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is that we're not taking the best advantage of the beds we have because we are holding on to people much longer than we would ideally need to, because in fact, these are patients who don't need to be in our hospital, but there's no place for them to go. And one of the key resources that we'd like to see available in the community is more of these residential care beds or habilitation home beds. These are places that, in a way, are meant to be sort of much smaller, kinder, gentler sort of state hospital alternatives. And there just aren't enough of them. That's one kind of resource. Another kind of resource that would be really valuable in the community would be more assertive community treatment programs. These are programs where mental health care providers, psychiatrists and nurses, actually go to patients' homes and check in on them every day. That's the kind of service that can keep people from needing to come into the hospital and help maintain them in the community. We have about six of those kinds of programs in the state, but we really need at least 16 of them, one for each urban center in Iowa.
Dr. Jimmy Potash is with the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, professor and chair of psychiatry there. Tony Lays of the Des Moines Register talking about mental illness and the services for the mentally ill here in Iowa. If you have a question or an experience to share, 1-866-780-9100. Tony, I wanted to ask you, you contacted the Iowa Department of Human Services. What is their input here? What do they say is the problem? Do they have a different view?
Well, a little bit. I mean, they are expressing optimism that the new managed care companies that have taken over administration of Medicaid will be more flexible and will find more creative ways to help these folks find alternative living situations. We just switched to that administration system in April. It's been very controversial. I think at this point it's too soon to tell if that's going to be much help.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see a need to add a lot of adult beds. They see a possible need to add some pediatric beds, but they're saying they feel like there are enough adult beds in the state if we use them more efficiently. They also have set up an electronic bed tracking system that's supposed to help hospitals see where there's an open bed. The hospital administrators I talked to have said that has not been very much help so far.
So this is an electronic database so that anywhere in the state you can see if you don't have a bed. You can send someone to a nearby facility that's equipped to take that person, and you can see. But
you would still have to call. It's not quite like Travelocity, but but what I'm hearing from the critics is it just doesn't get updated constantly, and so it's just almost immediately out of date. And they're feeling like it's not much help so far.
Dr. Potash, what about this private management? Rick Schultz, who oversees the mental health programs for the Human Services here in Iowa, says that these managers should ease the backlog of people stuck in the psychiatric units at hospitals. Do you see that as part of the solution?
I suppose it's too early to tell how that's gonna actually work out. Certainly, there is a role for managing these challenging patients. The concept of case management is the idea that you get really intensive involvement of nurses and social workers who really play a very big role in patients' lives, and they help to make sure that their needs are being met in a way that prevents them from having to come into the hospital.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of solutions that you see, residential facilities, being more assertive, Dr. Potash. What are the obstacles that you see in the way of improving a system for this subset that you described?
Well, certainly all of these things cost money. You know, on the one hand, clearly more resources are going to help make more of these services available. But in addition, there's the potential to make better uses of the resources that we have available right now. You know, for example, we're trying to work closely with the regions. As many listeners may know, the public mental health system was reorganized a couple of years ago into 14 regions around the state. And we're trying to work more closely with the people who coordinate mental health services in the regions to let them know what some of the obstacles are to getting patients out of the hospital.
Let's go to our phones to join our conversation as we discuss services for the mentally ill here in Iowa with Dr. Jimmy Potash of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and Tony Lays, health reporter for the Des Moines Register. 1-866-780-9100. Andrea in Des Moines. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Hi. My own psychiatrist left private practice 3 years ago, and then his practice closed. And he was in a group with other psychiatrists, and they dispersed, but the total number of psychiatrists was lower than it was in that practice after the dispersal. So my question is, this is not uncommon. Iowa has... we're in at least the bottom five. We may have been the bottom two of the number of psychiatrists per capita. So how can we possibly hope to solve this problem if we don't have more psychiatrists in this state? And what are the medical schools doing to resolve this?
Good question. Dr. Potash, you're educating psychiatrists at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, right, at the College of Medicine?
We are. We do have... just over 40 young psychiatrists in training in our program right now. We graduate about 10 new psychiatrists each year. And it's true that Iowa has a major shortage. Last I looked, we were maybe 47th in the country in number of psychiatrists per capita, which is clearly a problem. A while back, 20, 30 years ago, there were two other psychiatry residencies that train new psychiatrists in the state. Now there's just us, although two new programs were just created in the past couple of months in Des Moines, and that may help reduce the shortage. I think certainly we'd love to be able to train more people than we do.
Mm-hmm. Tony Lays, give us the view from the legislature, our lawmakers here. Is this on the radar there? We know the governor has been closing these institutions, these older institutions. What is the view from the lawmakers' perspectives?
Well, it certainly was very controversial when he decided to close those two institutions. He didn't get legislative approval. He didn't really need it legally. And it's been a couple of years since that. There's a lawsuit still hanging fire, but I don't know. At this point, they're closed. I don't know that they're going to be adding back any state beds. I'd just like to say that I think the stigma about mental illness really plays into this, that there would be more talk about this. There'd be an uproar if this involved patients with any other kind of condition. I mean, think about it. If breast cancer patients were having to spend weeks or months in the hospital for no reason, you'd have an army of people in pink T-shirts, rightfully so, protesting.
Right, and remind us of the costs again. In this one case, you said, what, $500,000 to keep this man who couldn't find local resources in the hospital.
Right, exactly.
And do we have bigger numbers? What does that mean for the state of Iowa? Because it's taxpayers that pay a lot of this, right?
Right. And the taxpayers pay for the residential care too, but it's usually, and that's not cheap because it's often for the most complicated patients, they need one-on-one care 24 hours a day, and that certainly adds up. But it's about half the cost of being in the hospital.
Susan is in Iowa City. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Susan, you are in work in this field?
Yes, I do. And my observation is that we do have the community resources. I mean, not as much as we need, but we have some. But there are instances, and quite frequently, individuals that need a higher level of care just being in the community. For instance, they're suicidal or they are having extreme hallucinations and they are not safe. Even within like a HAB home or 24-hour setting, just because there's 24 hours there, that may mean that there's only one person in the house that is working with 4 to 5 other people. So there's still more resources that need to be in the community. And having those RCFs was great when we were able to, use them, but so many of them have been closed too. So it's backed up all the way through. I know that right now, we are in the whole process of having somebody be referred to us, and by the time we get them, it is not unusual for it to be 4 to 5 months before we finally get the funding, get everything put together. So,
Susan, may I ask how long you've been working in this field?
I hate to admit it, but 27 years.
Okay, so what is the long view there from you, almost three decades in it? What is the trend? Has it been worse than this?
No, this is, people are just not getting what they need. I mean, if I have a mental health crisis today, it may be 2 to 3 months before I can see, it may be able to go in and see a counselor, but to see a doctor, it may be 2 or 3 months, and that would be good. So just everything is backed up. The doctor's offices, the housing, we're not even going to talk about the working, and what a difference being able to work. Even if it's a small amount of money, the difference that has made in individuals' lives, it is a mess.
Okay. Susan, Dr. Potash says it is a mess. There's someone who's been dedicating her career, three decades nearly of it, to this. And that's the subset you're talking about that she's describing working with?
Yeah. And, in terms of the small subset of the most ill people, one thing that we haven't mentioned, and it bears on this issue of whether resources are available. The fact that a lot of these patients actually are being cared for by the state in a sense, and that is they're in prison and they're in jails. We're spending money on people. We're incarcerating far more of them than we are treating people for their psychiatric issues. It seems to me that on the one hand, obviously, it's very unkind and even cruel. But it's also a pretty unconstructive way to deploy resources when it comes to paying for the cost of dealing with these folks.
Dr. Potash, in the minute or so that we have remaining, tell us the way out.
Well, I think that we can make much better use of the resources that we have. I mentioned a couple of things that can really make a difference.
Right.
This idea of more resources on what we sometimes call the back door, that is where people can go when they leave the hospital. In terms of the front door, that is spending money on ways that can keep people out of the hospital. One thing I didn't mention is crisis stabilization. That is, some of the people who come into the emergency room don't actually need to be in a psychiatric unit, but they need to have a crisis dealt with, like a family crisis or a housing crisis. So crisis stabilization programs can add a lot.
Okay, Dr. Jimmy Potash, thank you very much, Professor and Chair of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Tony Lays, very quickly, how will you be following this story with your reporting?
Well, I'll be interested to see if people are speaking up and paying attention or if it just slips beneath the waves again. It feels like it's getting a little bit, people are being a little bit more open about their personal experiences, which I think is what it's going to take.
Okay, Tony Lays, health reporter for the Des Moines Register. Dr. Jimmy Potash, thank you both for joining us this half hour and for our callers who chipped in with their questions and comments. Thank you both.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, it's Politics Day. We'll talk about the big imbalance, Hillary Clinton's money machine doing much better than Donald Trump's. Also, the firing of the embattled campaign manager in the Trump campaign less than a month before the Republican convention, and the legislation that doesn't look like it's in very good shape in terms of firearms, restrictions on that. We'll talk about that tomorrow on River to River. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon with help from Lauren Knutson. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.